The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back, 12s. We have on the line with us Brian Nemhauser. He's been blogging since 2007 at hawkblogger.com. His articles have been featured on ESPN.com, Seattle Times website, and frequently talked about on Seattle Sports Radio. He also does a regular podcast with Dave Softie Mahler that you can find on iTunes or through your podcast app. Thanks for coming on the show, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Brandon. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So is it true that you're in San Francisco right now? Or have you been listening to San Fran radio? What's this that we've been hearing about on the San Francisco radio stations today?
Well, I don't know if you've seen it, but the 49ers, I don't know if it's a PR department or media relations department, issued a release today instructing fans how to properly prepare for the Sunday's game, and that they should get there early and that they should wear red. And that they should, you know, look for the cues of when to cheer. And they spelled cues, Q-U-E-U-E-S, as opposed to Q-E-S, to add a little insult to the insult. And anyway, sports radio down here was horrified. They feel very embarrassed about the fact that their franchise is instructing them how to cheer.
Yeah, as they should. I think we all remember a couple years back when the Rams rules came out.
Right. Yeah.
Rams rules.
So, yeah, this was just like that. So, anything about them to maybe to instruct them to not cause earthquakes like Seattle fans do?
You know, I think it's probably a sore subject down here. They've had enough earthquakes and sports together over time.
I'm actually a little bit concerned myself that maybe we should stop causing earthquakes, you know, find that perfect level of loudness that to where we don't cause the earthquake, but still can affect the play on the field.
Yeah, I'm okay with the 2.0s or whatever they're talking about, but I'd rather not see what happens to the SoDo underground region.
Yeah.
So we got a real good one going.
No need to push it, for sure. So the Seahawks come in this weekend and face what was kind of the consensus second-best team in the NFC, and it turned out they didn't even belong on the field with the Seahawks. So can you even consider the Saints the second-best team after that performance, or are you looking at somebody else?
You know, I've been pretty impressed with what I had seen of the Saints leading up to that game. I spent a fair amount of time kind of watching and breaking them down. And you know, I think they are a legitimate contending team, you know, depending on who they're playing and where they're playing them. But all along, to be honest, I mean, San Francisco is the only team, really in the NFC that I think, really has what it takes to stand up to Seattle, or really could have what it takes if they put it all together. So, you know, if San Francisco has to go to New Orleans, they may not ever come to Seattle, but doesn't look like that's how it's going to set up.
So one thing I really like about your site, Brian, hawkblogger.com, is your statistical analysis on the Hawks. And you posted your quarterly report on the Seahawks on Tuesday. Was there anything in particular that jumped out at you?
Well, first and foremost, well, thanks for reading, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. Every week.
Oh, it's great stuff. You bet.
And, you know, I started doing this quarterly report last year, just because it helped me kind of see where the team, which parts of the team were trending in different directions, and there wasn't really a good way to do that anywhere else. So it's a little reference, hopefully, for people. And since I've been doing this, this is the first time that one of the phases of the game, I do offense and defense specifically in this case, and one of them is all in the green since it, over the last four games. The offense has improved in every category that I keep track of. Points per game, rushing yards a game, yards per carry, passing yards a game, yards per attempt. I mean, goes on down, third down conversion. And the two that really jump out as huge improvements, third down conversion percentage, they went from being 28th in the NFL just four games ago on offense to 9th in four games.
Wow.
Which is just crazy. And then the other one, which I think people will have seen some evidence of, is they had been 25th in the NFL in allowing sacks per game. They jumped up 12 spots to 13th in the NFL. So those are two pretty huge jumps this late in the season, and some pretty curious.
So you mentioned the sack numbers there, Brian. Is that what you attribute this uptick in the offense to? Is to the offensive line play, or is it something else that you kind of notice?
Yeah, I kind of talked about that, you know, looking in the article. It's all supposition, right? I think there's a couple things that are going on. I think the passing game has really stepped forward. And, you know, some of that is absolutely due to the offensive line. No doubt about that. I think that some of it is that they've also been getting better on first downs, getting more yardage. So they're having more manageable third downs, and they're not putting themselves in situations where it's clearly a third long and the defense can pin their ears back. So, you know, all this stuff kind of works together. And additionally, they've been going off the charts in terms of their explosive passes. So those are passes of 16 or more yards, as defined. You know, Pete Carroll defines explosive plays by 16-plus yard pass or 12-plus yard run. And they're getting much more in the way of chunk plays, explosive plays, than they were before. So all these things kind of piece together to allow the offense to take that big step forward.
So you threw a few stats out in your recent blog that kind of amazed me, is that no quarterback has been sacked fewer times than Russell Wilson over the last four games, three sacks, and that Seattle has outscored the Broncos offense over the last four games. So, and just a couple weeks ago, Russell Wilson wasn't even in the conversation as far as NFL MVP went. Is it possible that Wilson could now be in the running for NFL MVP?
I think he is. I don't think it's a matter of whether he could be. I think he's absolutely it. You know, he's there. The question will become, you're starting to see the national media starting to write about him this week after that game on Monday night. And there was a lot of talk that came from the national media about him as an MVP. And they'll start to dig in because it's a good story. No one wants to just have it be a, you know, foregone conclusion that Peyton Manning's going to win it. So they'll spend some time trying to find angles, and they're going to be surprised that there's actually some pretty good angles. You mentioned a couple. Another is, since week five in the season, which is a long time, Russell Wilson's got a higher passer rating than Peyton Manning. So, you know, Peyton Manning had that massive first game against Baltimore where he had, what, like seven touchdown passes?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, since week five on, Russell Wilson has been the more efficient passer, and clearly the Seahawks have been the better team. So, you know, it'll depend. The Seahawks have to finish really strong, and Russell has to finish strong too. But the most likely scenario is he'll be a very strong runner-up, but I don't think it's out of the question that he sneaks past Peyton Manning.
So you were the one who tipped me off last week that the Seahawks were number three in the NFL against the tight end, and that really played out against the Saints this last game. I feel like that used to be a real weakness of this team. So how would the Seahawks turn that around, you know?
You know, I haven't dug into specifically why that is, but, you know, a lot of folks have shared that perception that they've been weak against the tight end in past years. I've found that the Seahawks have when they've prioritized the tight end position, they defend it. I mean, Vernon Davis has never had a big game against the Seahawks since Pete Carroll's been around. Chancellor actually plays him pretty well. You know, a comment that got lost last season in the Atlanta game, and how terrible it was the way that ended, was Matt Ryan saying, you know, we saw that, you know, number 31 wasn't guarding Gonzalez, so we went to him for that last pass. You know, and the implication there is, you know, they respect Cam's ability to defend the tight end. So, you know, I think they've got so many unique players between KJ and Cam and Bobby and even Sherman. Or, you know, they've got a lot of guys that can mix and match in there, and I think it gives the coaches a ton of options depending on what kind of tight end they're facing.
And I do want to talk a little bit more about this San Francisco game coming up. Is there anything in particular that you might be nervous about, or what are you looking forward to in this game coming up?
Yeah, good question. You know, I can't bring myself to get nervous about this game. Seahawks could lose it. I mean, this is San Francisco Super Bowl right now. I mean, they've had their pants pulled down and, you know, been walking through school. You know, they basically have been walking down the first hole with their pants down. They didn't get past the woman's tee, and this is their chance to get some semblance of, you know, pride back. Nobody believes they're a better team than Seattle. Nobody down here that I've been able to find really has a credible belief that that's the case. So this is just about them reclaiming things. I think the Seahawks, no matter what the outcome of this game is, their destiny doesn't change. I think where it becomes kind of fun is if Seattle can take this game, they'll be clinching the division on San Francisco's territory, and I don't think there's much of a better message you could send doing that.
You're right, Brian. And speaking about messages, there's a couple Seahawks fans, a Cedric Morris and a Travis Platt, that put up a little fundraiser situation online and raised some money to fly a banner that would go over Candlestick saying "Go Hawks 12." And I guess they're going to do it for about 15 minutes or so. Have you had any buzz down there about San Francisco fans hearing about this and anything along those lines?
I just saw on Twitter, Pro Football Talk picked that up. So I think that's going to start getting some more attention. You know, it'll be interesting. You know, there's enough Oakland fans that go, we might see some small arms fire, in the air randomly at that time. But, you know, the other half of the San Francisco fans will probably be, looking down at their smartphones, and they'll never see it. So, or will be, you know, showing up at halftime, wondering what they're doing. So, you know, I think it's hilarious. It's nice to know that the Seahawks fans are having a little fun at the San Francisco fans' expense.
Yeah, hopefully they take that all right. You know, I think
they don't.
I hope they don't, and I don't think they will.
Now that okay, you got me there. I hope they don't either. So one of the things I know I hear San Francisco fans talking about is they're saying, well, now we have Michael Crabtree back, and we have Mario Manningham back, and so now we have the full complement of receivers for Colin Kaepernick to throw to, in addition to, you know, Vernon Davis and the old man there, I guess
Anquan,
yeah. So does that worry? I mean, we heard before coming into the Saints game that Drew Brees was going to pick apart our secondary, but are 49ers receivers any better than what Drew Brees has to throw to?
No, absolutely not. No, and you know, Colin Kaepernick's nowhere near the quarterback, but this also isn't in Seattle. So, I mean, that is a difference.
Right.
But look, Crabtree's never had a good game against the Seahawks. He was lightly used last week. He had one big play, where he got over the top and ran with it and looked good doing it. Great. But, you know, they were really limiting him. We'll see if they let him go all out this week. The guy that I think has the most to prove this week is Anquan Boldin. I mean, we talked about how the team as a whole got taken to the woodshed and had their pride, you know, bruised in the first matchup. Boldin, I mean, that guy was humbled, and he is a proud, proud veteran with, a lot of toughness. It'll be interesting to see if he can bounce back. The other guys, look, this isn't their first bite at the apple, and you know, they didn't do so great the first few times, even when the 49ers were winning. So Vernon Davis, Crabtree, you know, they don't scare me. It doesn't mean they can't do well, but they're certainly not fear factors for the Seahawks.
Well, before you go, Brian, I wanted to ask you about your Hawk Blogger magazine out. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so you know, I'm working with a new service that's out called Luca, and they're developing a magazine format for blogs and things like blogs, and it seemed like a cool thing to add to what I have. I certainly am not a designer and don't know how to make anything look good. So this is a chance to kind of take my content and put it in a format that's a little bit more fun to read on a tablet or a smartphone, get a subscription to it. And over time, what I'm really hoping for is that it's a way for fans to kind of gather and interact. The Luca team is looking to actually kind of integrate Twitter more and more into the magazine itself. So we'll see how that goes. You know, hopefully people can come there, they can find other Seahawks fans, other 12s, follow other 12s, and just have great conversation about the Seahawks every week.
Yep, and folks can find that on hawkblogger.com. One other thing I noticed about your site is that people can do their holiday shopping there, and folks, or you donate a portion of that to charity, is that right?
Yeah, so thanks for bringing that up. The way it works is, you know, I have a full-time job, and I don't do this for the money, so for a long time, I just said no to every advertiser. I wasn't interested in taking the time. And then it occurred to me one day that I could take that money and donate it somewhere. So I started taking ads and sponsors and other stuff. And I roll that up at the end of every year, and I make a donation to Ben's Fund, which is John Schneider and Tracy Schneider's charity that benefits parents that can't afford really expensive autism treatments. And so Seahawks fans can go to the site. They can buy tickets to games. They can buy Seahawks gear, Huskies gear, Cougar gear, Duck gear, whatever your thing is. And the percentage that I get of that, which is about 10 or 11%, depending on what you're buying, goes directly to charity. So you get a great Christmas or holiday gift and pay the same you would normally, and some of it goes to charity. So it seems all good.
Very cool. Well, Brian, I want to thank you for coming on our show. Also want to let folks know, if you want to follow Brian, you can go to facebook.com/hawkblogger or @hawkblogger on Twitter. Thanks for coming on, Brian.
Thanks for having me, guys. And thanks to all the military members if they're listening. I really appreciate their service.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.